Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world.
Hello.
It's the Ron Kelly Show.
Hey, yes.
The news you want.
Is the perception still that a black man with a gun is a criminal?
With the topics you need.
Marching might have been good for back in the day, but what kind of effectiveness is marching have on society today?
The Ron Kelly.
Black males 18 to 24 years old have highest homicide offending rate.
4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 1 p.m. Pacific. It's the Ron Kelly Show.
So don't get it twisted. Get it twisted.
On blogtalkradio.com.
Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen. Do not get it twisted. It is the Ron Kelly Show for a Sunday morning. It's October 26, 2014. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining me today. I thank you so much for your indulgence. Every Sunday morning right here on the Ron Kelly Show. Now, starting at 10 o'clock on Sundays, we moved away from the Friday. Obviously, we moved away from the Friday at 4 p.m. because I got a lot of complaints that folks were not able to listen to the show because they were at work, et cetera, et cetera. So those of you who work inside, you know, well, you're home today. Let's just put it like that. You're home today. And the numbers have gone up already. As a matter of fact, the numbers went up on the very first Sunday morning broadcast. I want to thank you all, you know, for your support. It means a lot to a brother like me on the come up trying to make it happen in this cruel, cruel world. All right, everybody. It's 10 o'clock Sunday morning. It's the Ron Kelly Show. And the phone number here is 347-426-3214. That's 347-426-3214. It's the phone number if you'd like to call into the program and let me let us know what you think, because we don't have to stay on topic. I mean, I do have a show set up for you this morning. We got a lot to get to. But we do, you know, but you can call in and say, you know, speak on whatever you want to speak on. It's, you know, it's freedom of speech here on the Ron Kelly Show. 347-426-3214. 347-426-3214. And you can log in to the actually, for Facebook people, you can log on to the Facebook page, the Ron Kelly Show, and you can post your comments there. If you don't want to call into the program, you're certainly able to do that. Let's get to what we got to get to this morning. I want to start out talking about Michael Brown, because the Michael Brown case is already circling the bowl, as some of you know who have been following it. You know, Michael Brown, the young man who was murdered by the police officer in Ferguson, Missouri. And what's going on now, first of all, the federal government, or should I say the Department of Justice, released a statement saying that they haven't found any evidence so far that would, they found no evidence so far to charge the police officer in this case. They've found no credible evidence so far for any charges. So we already know right then and there that the thing is circling the bowl already. We know. Now, the governor of Missouri has created a Ferguson Commission. And I believe that this Ferguson Commission is something that will, you know, to address what has happened in the city of Ferguson, Missouri, so far, with only three police officers. Out of a force of 50 police officers, only two or three of them are African Americans, which kind of gives you a snapshot of the racial makeup of the police department in Ferguson, Missouri, with a population of 70 or so percent black folks. Now, while I'm waiting for this to load, you can... Actually, the official website of the Ron Kelly Show is www.theronkellyshow.com. That's www.theronkellyshow.com. I'm waiting for the story to load on my iPad. You can go onto the website. You can check me out, the history of the show, a little background information on me, pictures of former guests and co-hosts, and also the Ron Kelly Show merchandise store you can purchase. Your various items blazing with the Ron Kelly Show logo on them, so you can do that as well. So it's www.theronkellyshow.com if you'd like to peruse the Ron Kelly Show radio website. All right, everybody. So we're talking about Michael Brown. the Ferguson, Missouri teen who was killed by a police officer, Darren Wilson. And see, now, how many Michael Browns do we need before we actually do something? And I'm not saying that we should go out there and riot or anything like that, but how many Michael Browns, how many Trayvon Martins, you know, Anthony Baez, so on, and Abdul Weiman, so on and so forth, how many of these cases do we need before we actually get up and do something? See, we need to come over Facebook and, you know, I don't begrudge anybody from going on Facebook and saying what they need to say, but, you know, and I'm going to talk about that in another segment of the show, how social media actually is hurting the civil rights movement. It's not helping it. It's hurting it. I mean, it's helping in regards to information, but it's hurting it in regards to people getting up and doing something because they can sit in their chair, be an armchair activist, and post whatever they want on their Facebook page and go on about their daily lives. So we'll talk about that in another segment of how social media is hurting, is actually hurting the civil rights movement. Because don't think that the civil rights movement ended in 1964 with the Civil Rights Act. No, it didn't stop there. It didn't stop there. And 50 years ago, we're still fighting. It was as if there was no Civil Rights Act. Because the laws that were enacted in the Civil Rights Act of 1964 are being blatantly disregarded by many in the law enforcement community. And I don't mean to say that, and I know some officers, and I'm going to be a sheriff's deputy next year. So I'm not indicting the law enforcement community as a whole, but there are some bad apples, like there are in everything. You know, there are some bad apples in the bunch that need to be weeded out before something serious happens. Now, going back to my statement earlier, I'm not saying that we should be looking to cause any real problems, you know, in regards to going out and rioting and this type of stuff, but we do need to do something. You know, we do need to do something. See, because the little bit of protest, and, you know, see, the people from Ferguson in that area were the only ones that were protesting at the time that Michael Brown was killed. No one from no people from any other area. You know, in the case of Trayvon Martin, for example, when everybody descended, you know, on that little town in Florida, and there were a lot of people down there. And we just see what happens with these type of situations is that the people come and they rally and they leave, and that's it. You know, we're so temporary with our resolve that all we do is we go to the area, we protest, and we leave. And Trayvon Martin is just a distant memory for most of us. George Zimmerman has gone on with his life, whatever's left of it. And the parents of Trayvon Martin are left, you know, just holding the bag, for example. And so people need to get out and do something. We can't just go protest and make a little noise and then go away, because this is what happened. And you look on Facebook, and you see people protesting about different things or posting about different things, and then, you know, somebody, here's what happens. Here's what happens. Here's the formula. Here's the new normal, I like to call it. Someone will see something on in the news. They'll post it on Facebook. A bunch of other people will post comments, and then that's it. Game over. They go back to their daily lives. They go back to whatever it was they were doing until the next story pops up. So get mad, post about it, and get over it. This is what happens. This is what's happening in the black community right now. Get mad, post about it, move on. This is what's going on. And all the injustices and all the, you know, the atrocities that have been committed against black folks in modern day America, 2014, get mad, post about it, get over it. And this is what's going on. This is exactly what's going on. And people are just, like, again, I'll go into more detail with this when I do my segment about how social media is hurting the civil rights movement. Not helping, but hurting. See, social media has become the only thing that folks are doing. This is what's happening. People go on websites, they go on Facebook, whatever the case may be, post, and again, as I said earlier, they post about it, and they forget about it. You know? So in regards to information, see, it stops with the posting. Nothing else happens. You know? So I'm going to do a segment about that, how social media has ruined the civil rights movement. We're going to talk about that. All right. Anyway, we have a caller on the line from the 203 area code. What's your name? And first of all, you need to turn your. I can hear myself in the background. While I do appreciate that, but I hear myself in the background, and I'm a little confused. So we just turn it down a little bit, please. All right, brother. I don't know, if it's a brother. That 203 area code. Ron Kelly Show. Welcome. How are you? What's your name? Where you calling from?
How you doing, Al? My name is Osman Shabazz, and I'm calling from Connecticut.
Hey, Brother Osman. How are you, man?
I'm pretty good. And yourself?
I'm doing well. Listen, I was just talking about, I started out by talking about the Michael Brown case, and then I moved on to talk about how Facebook and how these things are harming the civil rights movement because, and I'm going to try to catch you up on this, how Facebook and social media is actually harming the civil rights movement, not helping it, because people are posting about stuff and going on about their lives. I think that everybody who posted about the atrocities that are committed against Black Americans, if everybody who posted would rally, you know, you could shut down a city like New York, for example. If all the millions of folks who post on Facebook actually left it, keyboards and went out and did something, I think we could really make a difference, Brother Osman. What do you think about that?
I hear what you're saying, Ron. My question is, would shutting down the city be effective? Sitting on Broad and Market, blocking traffic, keeping people from getting home for work, causing them to miss air flights, or even causing a delay in the ambulance, getting to a sick person or a sick person in the ambulance getting to the hospital. I mean, from an optical standpoint, it looks well, but I just don't know how effective blocking streets, tying up towns, and blocking traffic has been in resolving some of the issues that afflict the Black community.
Well, civil disobedience worked in the 60s when Dr. Martin Luther King was here. It worked back then, you know, with the Memphis bus boycott. Black folks decided they weren't going to ride on the bus no more. It worked, you know. It worked.
Well,
and some of these things,
right.
Civil disobedience did work. What happened? Civil disobedience did result in the civil rights legislation of 1964. It did work. You understand what I'm saying, brother?
It did work.
See, because nobody's paying attention to what people are saying on Facebook. Nobody cares, for the most part. You know, Facebook is a diversion. I mean, all right. Here's what happens, brother. Now, we put the information out there, but what happens as a result of it? Nothing.
You can't say that. You don't know what people are doing after they hear certain messages on Facebook in their own communities, in their own neighborhoods. You don't know what they're doing. A lot of times I find that many of the articles and points that I make on Facebook, a lot of people don't comment, a lot of people don't like it. But when I run into them, they know every detail about the post, and they talk to me about their feelings and what they're trying to do. So,
Why are they talking to you? There's nothing you can do about it.
They ran it to me. That's why they're talking to me.
Right, but there's nothing you can do about it, though. There's nothing you can do about it. So why are they talking to you? Why are they expressing their? And I don't mean to be disrespectful, brother. But why are they expressing their disdain to you, someone who is powerless really to do anything about what's going on in the city of Newark, for example?
Well, actually, I'm not powerless. No one is powerless. Anybody with a voice has power. Anybody with a pen has power. The question is, everybody can express that power in one form or fashion. So going to meetings, going to protests, blocking roads, that's not necessarily the only way or even the most effective way to get things done. Now, you brought up the 60s. The reason why what happened in the 60s in terms of the protesting and disrupting normal life was effective because you were dealing with intelligent people that were trying to get laws changed, things written on the books in terms of a law, in terms of freedom for African Americans. But if you're trying to get people to stop killing each other in the black community, who for the most part is killing each other 1,000 to 1 compared to cops, then blocking the street and protesting is not going to solve the problem. It's a cultural problem. It's a problem of a mentality. So how do you address that mentality is what I'm talking about, not doing things to make yourself feel good or disrupting traffic to say you've actually done something. You've done nothing. You've done nothing unless you've changed the hearts and minds of the criminals that are committing the murders, the carjacking, the robberies, and all types of other mayhem within the black community. So what is the most effective way to change the mindset of those who are creating and causing hell? And it's not protest.
Well, first of all, you're not going to change the mindsets of the criminals that are out there right now. You're not going to do that. That's not going to happen because we know, statistically speaking, and in other ways, we know recidivism is extremely high for people who have been have committed crimes, who have gone to jail, and a great majority of them wind up back in jail. And you know, going in, you already know that you know that you're going to have a record. People who commit crimes for the first time know that they're going to have a record. They get caught. They already know how employers frown upon people who have records. They already know this, and they go into it anyway. So you can't come out poo-pooing and crying because you can't find a job after you committed a crime. You can't do that. You shouldn't have committed the crime in the first place. And all this nonsense about people committing crimes because there's no jobs is crap, because criminals are criminals. It's crap. You know what I'm saying, brother? All due respect to you, it's crap. It's crap. Because, you know, these people are committing major crimes. They're not stealing a loaf of bread out of the Pathmark or a pack of meat. You don't need somebody else's car because you don't have a job. What, are you going to use it to go look for one? You know what I'm saying? You don't need to carjack someone's vehicle out from under them because you can't find a job.
I agree.
You know what I'm saying? So it's crap. But my point is, brother, that let's say, for example, with the civil disobedience, there are the police, for example. Okay, these people who perpetrate these atrocities, they know what we're gonna do. Oh, the Negroes, they're just gonna rear up and they're gonna go away. And we do. That's why it keeps going on. You know, we get angry, we post on Facebook, and look at what happened in Ferguson, for example. Hardly anybody, people from other countries, I mean other parts of America weren't there. There wasn't enough people there. You know? My thing is this, brother, before I let you speak. My thing is this.
Yes.
Would you rather have 1 million people doing 1 million different things, or would you rather have 1 million people doing one thing? Now, you said earlier that we don't know what people are doing in their community, and we should know. We should know, because we can gather together and support whoever it is that's making a difference. So you don't want 1 million people having 1 million different agendas, which is what we have going on now, and that's why we don't have any progress, because we got so many different people doing so many different things, and nobody knows, one hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing in regards to this movement, Brother Osman.
Yes, sir. I understand fully what you're saying. I disagree with one thing. I'm actually against all of the focus on Ferguson and police brutality. When this past Friday in Newark, about 7 or 8 people were shot. Earlier in the week, you got 15-year-old girls were shot. You got black people killing each other all over the place every day. And you want to protest and gather the nation around one cop killing? When the majority of homicides is taking place in the black community by other blacks, how is that effective? What is that all about? Is it because it's sexy when a white cop kills an African American that we all rally and get ourselves together and want to do something? What about the daily killings by African Americans against other African Americans in the black community, and as we speak, there's probably somewhere in America, and I'm sure, is rolling up now, pulling out a gun, a black person killing another black person. So when I see all of this focus on Ferguson and not on the black community itself in terms of its dysfunctions and its propensity towards violence by some members of that community, it makes me wonder, do we really want to solve the problem, or are we just emotionally reacting because it was a Caucasian that killed an African-American kid, by the way, that had just committed a strong armed robbery, rather than innocent people riding their bikes and their tricycles and their go-karts, getting killed by random bullets? I had a friend in North, on South Park Avenue, had a productive meeting, and right down the street, shots are being fired, and people are being struck by bullets. So my thing is, I don't get all hyped up over this Ferguson thing. You know, I want to hear the evidence, number one. I want to see what happened. But I think the focus should be on what we are doing to each other and not always get riled up when white folks do something to us, which is a small percentage of the murders that are being committed, murders by blacks in their community.
You're absolutely right, brother. It's almost like, I'm going to take a quick break. It's almost like the N-word, for example. Like, I don't have a problem calling my black brother an N-word, but white man, don't you do it. You know, we'll take a break and we'll come right back. If you want to hang around, brother, we'd appreciate it. We'll take a quick break. We'll come right back with more. Thank you, sir. It's the Ron Kelly Show, and it's on blogtalkradio.com.
There was a need in talk radio, and one man will fill that need.
What kind of effectiveness is marching out of society today?
And you too can be a witness. The Ron Kelly Show on blogtalkradio.com.
Some statistics are surprising, some are unbelievable, and some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%, and that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Now, back with more of the fastest growing internet radio show on the World Wide Web.
And it's on. It's go time.
The Ron Kelly Show. And on the web, theronkellyshow.com.
And good morning, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining us here. It's the Ron Kelly Show on an absolutely glorious Sunday morning. A little windy, and I'm not the weatherman, but it's a little windy, and but the sun is shining brightly out there, everybody, and it's a beautiful day in most neighborhoods, I should say. Thank you so much for joining me today, and I encourage everybody on Facebook right now, all the people I've sparred with, including this brother right here, Brother Osman Shabazz, and all the folks that I have scuffled with on Facebook, I encourage you to call into the show. And it's not about the ratings. I already have good ratings. It's not about that. There's a more important issue we have here. We need to get together collectively, and we need to get together collectively and fix our problems. You know, we're going to talk a little bit about how we are pinning our hopes on these local officials who, and I'm not going to say they don't care, but, you know, there's really not much these local officials can do. Local officials and mayors and council people, there's not a whole lot they can do. Even President Obama is handicapped in a lot of ways in regards to what happens on the ground in a lot of these communities. And Brother Osman, you and some other folks have broiled Newark Mayor Ross Baraka, who hasn't even changed the drapes yet in the mayoral office. And so you and some other folks are broiling Mr. Ross Baraka on the barbecue grill already. In response to the inaction that you folks perceive has taken place since he's become mayor. Speak to that, and why would you even believe that Mayor Baraka can do anything about what's happening in the city of Newark?
Okay, thank you, Ron. I don't think it's too early. As you say, burning down a great street before the man got settled in. The man just had 2,000 people at a theater showing a documentary about the successes of his first 100 days. So if he can call the community together and make a big red carpet presentation of his first 100 days, I think I should be able to, in fairness, kind of question him on the progress that's been made in the first 100 days of his administration, because he thinks that it's been great. And I'm sure there has been progress, and I've noticed some. I see Rahman Muhammad, for instance, and Al Tariq Kenny. They're doing pretty good in trying to reach out to give, you know, African Americans jobs that traditionally did not have these opportunities. But I also see a terrible lack of a plan or effort, even in terms of resolving the crime situation.
All right, let me ask you this, brother. Before you go on, Brother Osman, I apologize for interrupting you. Before you go on, let me ask you this now. Did you see the video, and are you aware of what accomplishments that he's touting? And how do you, and what do you, well, speak to those, if you've seen the video, speak to the accomplishments he said he's done. Speak to that. What your opinion is of whether he actually accomplished them or not. Have you seen the video?
I've seen it, but I don't recall everything in it. But what I do recall...
Well, what stands out then? I'm sorry, brother. What stands out in the video? What was the biggest lie you think he told, if he was lying? What was the biggest piece of misinformation that stuck out for you in the video?
I don't want to characterize what he did as a lie.
I corrected myself, brother. I said misrepresentation. What was the biggest misrepresentation in the video?
Okay, the biggest misrepresentation was his success on crime.
And what did he say?
He was saying
What statistics did he quote as far as the crime?
I don't know him off the top of my head, but in general, he was saying that crime is down in terms of murders, crime is down in terms of carjacking, and he listed various categories. Now, during a debate on Facebook, no less, there were people, law enforcement people and other people in the community that had questions about how city officials calculated what is a murder. And some people say the only thing, the statistics that he was using is that if people were dead on arrival, or dead on the scene. That's what counted as murder. So if a person got shot and died a few days later, that wasn't counted as a murder.
Okay,
that's
so
what some people say on Facebook. So,
all right, so it's I'm like, so what he's saying, like, I'm sorry,
ahead,
bro. No. I'm sorry.
I would have to dig into the methodology of how he got those statistics. And what I ask people in his administration who were also on the thread on Facebook is, why don't you post the actual numbers, okay? From July to October 29th or whatever date it is, 24th, this is how many murders were committed in 2013, and this is how many murders were committed in 2014. When you say murders, this is how many people died as a result of guns. And I can calculate the percentages myself. None of them would do that. So I'm a little suspect about the numbers, and I also want to believe my lying eyes, what I'm seeing every day happening in Newark, that crime is the last thing, you know, you should, you know, bump your chest about in Newark. You have to, you know, the crime is out of control, and I'm sure you agree with that.
I would definitely agree with that, brother. So he's trying to recategorize what murder is, in the same way that former President Clinton tried to recategorize what sex was,
exactly
during the Monica Lewinsky scandal. All right, so okay, so he's trying to recategorize what a murder is.
I want to be clear. Some people have charged him with that. It's not me saying it. But I'm just basically repeating what was in that dialogue about Mayor Baraka's numbers. I don't have enough expertise to understand exactly the methodology that he used, but I do know that I did request that they just post the numbers. How many carjackings from 2013 as of October 2014 versus how many, do it like that. And I can say, okay, if it was 74 at this point in 2014, and it was 80, at this point in 2014, then I can kind of go ahead and calculate and figure out and get an idea of the true improvement in crime if there was none.
Right, but see, but some of these crimes now, some of the carjackings and some of these things, some of these crimes are crimes of opportunity for the most part, Brother Osman. And I don't see where more police police cannot be everywhere at once.
Absolutely.
We know that. They cannot be everywhere. So I don't think there's any way to stop people from being carjacked. And folks have to understand. You don't, like me, myself personally, I had two high-end cars, and late model high-end cars, and a motorcycle, and I don't drive through certain areas. I just don't. I'll go the long way. You know what I'm
right.
saying? And folks have to wise up. I mean, in lieu of some improvement, in lieu of some kind of police action, God only knows what, that would slow this thing down or stop it, there's no way to, folks have to understand, like, look, you can't drive through certain areas. So I don't
right.
drive, there's a lot of areas in Newark I don't drive. You know, I won't go through, especially with my sports car, they'd be drooling if they ever saw it.
Right.
And so they would, and I'm sure they would want to grab it.
Right.
There might be something that car manufacturers can do in regards to, I'm sure at some point they'll have it. I think they already do. Jaguar has a fingerprint on the very, very high-end cars. They have a fingerprint system where your fingerprint is the only way the car will start. So there may be something that the car manufacturers can do if a person got out of the car would shut off or whatever. I mean, I'm sure there's something they can do. It probably cost an arm and a leg, but I'm sure there's something that they can do, brother. But, absent of that, I don't think there's anything they can do in regards to carjackings. But folks just have to understand, if you got a nice car, and I'm telling my listeners out there, if you got a nice vehicle, don't drive through. We know where the trouble spots are. Don't drive down
right.
Broke Street in Irvington. Don't do it, especially at a certain time of night. So,
can I say something real quick?
Sure, brother. Sure.
I thought the same thing that you thought. But I've been following the carjacking because for some reason that really bothers me that human beings cannot drive their vehicle safely in a particular geographic area inside the United States of America. That really bothers me. But what I found is that you don't have to have a nice car. I've seen cases where people in Newark have carjacked 1999 Cadillacs, falling apart, Jetta, Nissan, Altimas. So you don't have to have a Mercedes-Benz or a Jaguar or a BMW or even a Range Rover. That's what bothered me. I said, well, if I can go visit Newark more with my family if I just got a junk car, and maybe I'll lessen the chances, but they might give me for that.
Well, brother, the shiny penny, if you have a pile of pennies, but the shiny penny is going to get the most attention. So,
right.
If you got a shiny penny, don't be driving through certain neighborhoods. And you're right. And see, that comes down to what the carjacking is really about. Some of these carjackings are gang-related. Some fledgling or aspiring gang members are sent out to commit some of these crimes to prove their worthiness to get into some of these gangs. So I think that when a low end car is being carjacked, it might be just they're just looking for the first thing they can grab so they can jump in, so to speak, into a gang. So a lot of these carjackings are being committed by people who want to join gangs. It's not necessarily they want your car, because a lot of these cars are found unharmed a couple of hours later.
Right.
Unless they park them in a bad neighborhood and somebody stripped it. But they don't even want these cars. They just want to prove themselves to these gangs. But, you know, my point is this, brother. I think that we need to start from scratch. We need to start with our children when they are first born. You know what I mean? Because I statistically speaking, I'm a psychologist and mental health people I talk to, they said that a child's most formative years are between like 1 and 4. They learn most of what, you know, that's when their personality is formed, between 1 year old and 4 years old.
Absolutely.
And we need to, so what we need to do is, I'm not saying that the kids out there now are lost causes. I'm not saying that at all. But what we need to do to stem the tide, my brother, is to start grabbing these kids in kindergarten, you know, preschool, kindergarten, because what we do is we just watch them. Oh, they're so cute. We watch them for the first 3 or 4 years while they're formulating their personality they wind up subscribing to years later when they're grown.
You're absolutely right.
So we need to grab onto that, my brother. What do you say to that?
I absolutely agree. And there's a small window between the age, I believe it's 1 and 5, where you can really time and set the clock as to where that child is going to end up years later. That's when they have to be led to. That's when they have to be nurtured. That's when they have to be taught certain fundamental skills. And also that's when a lot of their moral values come from. So the earlier the better. There are studies that say that if you read a book to a child in the womb of the mother, that has an effect. So you can never underestimate the power of getting in there early regarding raising children, educating them, giving them moral values in terms of how it's going to affect their character and their values down the road, and also their educational learning skills.
Right, right. See, and this is what we need to do, because we just look at them, and we just look for babysitters for the first few years, especially those of us who work. We have jobs, and we work. And when a man and a woman has a child, they both work, they're looking for somebody to take care of the kid while they're at work, basically. You know, they're looking for somebody to take care of the kid. So for the first few years, you don't even, you know, for most folks who are professional people, for example, they don't even really spend a whole lot of time with their kids in the first few years, because they're working, and the kid, you know, and you're looking for babysitters. That's what you're looking for, babysitters. You know, so we need to get to these kids early and understand that we can't just admire them for the first few years and not try to teach them anything. Because by the time they get 6, 7, 8, and if you see my brother Osman, you know what some of these kids are doing in second and third grade, coming to school with guns, drugs, and all kinds of stuff. You know, so the horse has already left the barn for the most part by the time they get 8 or 9, and I don't want to say they're lost causes, but, you know, it's hard to go find that horse once he runs out of there, you know. So we need to grab onto our kids, man. Grab onto them early. Start teaching them early in preschool and kindergarten, and getting molding them at that point. You know, you can't, once cement gets hard after a while. So if you don't mold it, you know, you don't pour it when it's soft, by the time it hardens, there ain't a whole lot you can do with it. And this is the same thing that's happening with our kids.
It's funny that you mentioned molding, because one of the analogies I always like to use, and I've been using it for years, is that when you get them young, they're wet clay. You can mold them and form them. But as they're older, they become baked clay. And it is what it is. And a lot of times the only way to get them to straighten up is to break them. Because once clay is baked and it's finished, and it got certain personality traits, certain moral values, then the only way you can really make a change is you got to break it and rebuild it. And the problem is, that costs a lot of money, takes a lot of time, and chances are you have a high failure rate when they get older and you try to change them. Because they, at that point, some kind of way they got to figure that out themselves and change themselves.
Right.
But if you saw, like you said, when they're young, putting in the right cultural values, the right morals, building up their vocabulary, for instance. And so that when they enter kindergarten, they're not educationally behind white kids in the suburbs. There's a study that was done that shows that by the time a six-year-old white kid enters kindergarten versus an African-American, the white kid has thousands of words more in his vocabulary than the African-American kid. And as a result, they start off with an advantage from day one, practically. And then that advantage carries on all the way through high school and in some cases throughout life.
Right, and it goes back to... Go ahead, brother.
I'm sorry, we got to level the playing field. We got to do more things right in our homes. You know, we got to cut off the TV time. We got to have quiet time so these kids can do their homework. We have to help them with their homework. We have to take them and buy them books besides what's assigned to them in order for them to read. We have to basically build our household around educational proficiency. And until we do that, because that's what Caucasians are doing, that's what white folks are doing. They're taking
that's
their
right.
kids to the place, to libraries, buying them extra books, taking them to the museum, taking them to aquariums, talking to them, using very sophisticated vocabulary around them that they're picking up. So if we talking Ebonics and broken English around our kids, they're going to pick it up, and they're going to write like that. They're going to talk like that.
Right,
so there's a lot
right.
of things that we need to do at home when they're young in order
and
for them to have better outcomes throughout life.
That's right, brother. And also, like, around here, like, I live in Montclair, and they have Kumon and these places where you can go and Kumon and some of these places where you can go if the kid is struggling, you can take them to these things. And they're not very that expensive. And people out there who are worried about the cost, I mean, well, you know, you're struggling to pay for that Lexus that you can't afford that got you underwater. You know how our folks do. You know, we want to look like folks who don't have nothing want to look like they do. And folks who do want to look like they don't. So, you know, You can buy that Mercedes Benz, that Lexus, because you want to keep up with the Joneses, but you can't afford to help your child. And somebody, I'm not sure if it was you, Brother Osmond, made a very interesting point about this, about the meeting that was held, and I'm going to take another quick break. The meeting that was held in the Newark public school system, I don't have all the particulars on it, but from what I understand, only a handful of parents showed up in a school that has about 2,000 to 3,000 kids, only a handful of parents showed up. That's why I say to you, brother, we need to stop pointing the finger at Mraz Baraka and Barack Obama and whoever else, Christie, because these people are only interested in one set of kids. One set of kids, their own. Those are the kids they're most concerned about. You know, your
exactly.
kids are just the way. You have to be concerned about your own kids. You have to be concerned about your own neighborhood. Stop blaming Rod Baraka. He made some promises. Politicians historically have always made promises that they couldn't keep. We all know that.
So you're saying Barack Obama, Rod Baraka is just another lying politician. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying just another lying politician. What I'm saying is that he wanted to be mayor. He wanted to be mayor.
And
he made, and all politicians make promises that they know that will be difficult at best. And I'm being nice about it.
Uh-huh.
They're making, because they, you know, because they have people who advise them. Say this, say that. The people are concerned about crime. That's why they do surveys and polls. What do you care about? What do you think about? What's your biggest concern? What's your biggest fear? And then they use that information and then they address it. Okay, Mr. Baraka, for example. I'm not saying this actually happened. I don't want to sue me. But, okay, this is what happened. Candidate. This is candidate X. People are concerned about crime. So let's come up with let's say something, you know, constructive about crime. People are concerned about jobs. All right, let's say something constructive about jobs. Let's say something constructive about infrastructure. I mean, this is what happens. And people buy it, they buy it. You know, the only person I think that really made a real difference in Newark, a city such as Newark, was Sharp James. Sharp James. I think during Sharp James's during Sharp James's candidacy, for example, I think Newark improved a hell of a lot more than it did under Ken. The mayor prior to Sharp James, who was indicted. I forget his name.
Mayor Gibson.
Ken Gibson. Who crashed and burned over some improprieties that allegedly took place during his administration. But I think Newark came a long way under Sharp James. You know, but the crime problem, he didn't solve. Sharp James was able to change the things that were within his power to change, and he did.
Right.
With the building. But in regards to, you can't legislate morality, Brother Osmond. You can't legislate morality.
I understand that. Let's get back to Ross Baraka for a minute.
All right, hold on a second. Let me take a quick break, because I'm already 5 minutes over, and I'm obligated to take these breaks.
No problem.
Radio station. All right, let's take a quick break, everybody. We'll come right back, Brother Osmond Shabazz. So some of y'all, more y'all need to call this show, and we need to have these discussions, because a million people doing a million things is not going to accomplish nothing. We'll be right back with Brother Osmond Shabazz in just a second. It's the Ron Kelly Show, and it's on blogtalkradio.com.
The Ron Kelly Show. And on the web, theronkellyshow.com.
Take a little shortbread, daddy not boss. How many cheeks? Take a little shortbread, daddy not boss. How many cheeks in the cookie jar? One.
Dad, you're supposed to jump over the rope.
One more time.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Oh no, I'm in charge of our 10-year class reunion and don't know where to begin.
Don't let this happen to you. For your next event, wedding, anniversary, class reunion, or just need to promote your business, Birkett Promotions has you covered.
BirkettPromotions.com.
Over 200 custom-made products USA made, along with personalized imprints and logos.
BirkettPromotions.com.
Birkett Promotions does it all. Big or small, we can fit your budget.
BirkettPromotions.com.
Need your event to stand out with that personalized touch? Pens, pencils, t-shirts? Go to BirkettPromotions.com.
BirkettPromotions.com.
Mention the Ron Kelly Show and receive an additional 10% off an already great prize.
Thanks to Birkett Promotions, my event was a success.
BirkettPromotions.com. B-I-R-K-E-T-T Promotions.com.
BirkettPromotions.com.
A business you can trust. A member of the Better Business Bureau, New Jersey. A-plus rating.
Now, back with more. Of the fastest growing internet radio show on the World Wide Web.
And it's on. It's go time.
The Ron Kelly Show. And on the web, theronkellyshow.com.
You better believe it. It's theronkellyshow.com. www.theronkellyshow.com is the official website of the Ron Kelly Show. So you can slip on over there after or during the show. You can leave a message in my blog and commentary if you'd like. There's a link to the Ron Kelly Show Facebook page, information about me and former guests and where the show has been over the years, different stations, and of course the Ron Kelly Show merchandise store where you can purchase Ron Kelly Show merchandise. I talked to Brother Osmond Shabazz, one of my Facebook opponents, I should say. And we get into it on Facebook, a lot of us. I get into it with a lot of people because I don't agree with a lot of people on Facebook, sure, including Brother Newark Citizen, who is your, I won't say his name, Newark Citizen, who is joined at the hip with you, my brother. I don't know if you know him, if you ever met him or not. But he seems to agree with mostly everything. You guys are like a tag team in regards to what's going on in the city of Newark and so on and so forth,
well, brother.
But let me ask you this about this. Now, we got the midterm elections coming up, and I promised everybody that I would talk about this. Midterm elections are coming up. I heard President Obama on Steve Harvey's show the other day, Steve Harvey, my radio brother. Steve Harvey show talking about how important midterm elections are. And I consider myself a liberal, I guess you can say, with a conservative edge. And you know, I kind of think that the Democrats are kind of. No, I don't kind of. I think that the Democrats are taking that vote for granted. So, I think the Democrats. I don't know how into politics you are on a national level, but I think that the Democrats are doing enough to earn our vote. What do you think about that? If you're into this at all?
Can you be more specific with the question?
Yeah, the Democrats. I think that black folks have traditionally voted Democratic, and Democrats, feel like they really don't have to do a whole lot to get our vote because it's kind of automatic. I don't know how you vote, what your political slant is, or as far as what party you favor, but I think that the Democrats have taken our vote for granted for the most part.
Absolutely.
And an interesting point that was made by the, I don't have the information in front of me. I'll speak to her on the next show. Interesting point that was made by a brother, who actually a white man, who said that Democrats wooed black folks with giveaways. They GRA and food stamps and this type of stuff. And very interesting point. Very interesting point that the Democrats and liberals woo our vote with giveaways, with GRA, with in other words, all the social programs are door prizes for black folks to vote Democratic. Would you speak to that? What do you think about that? I thought it was very interesting. I thought it was quite interesting. If you don't have an opinion, you don't have an opinion. You say you don't have an opinion, that's fine. But
no,
I thought it was quite fascinating.
I definitely have an opinion on this. It's absolutely true that the Democrats have taken the black vote for granted, and I don't blame them for taking the black vote for granted because the black vote will vote does not demand nothing of them, especially since the election of President Obama. There is no Democratic president in the history of this republic that has gotten away with not being held accountable by black folks as much as President Barack Obama has been. I mean, we're very excited that we have a African-American president, and rightfully so. It's a historic event. And what also fuzzies the picture is when we see folks like in Fox News throwing out those racial jabs. So our commitment to Obama becomes more emotional than rational. You just see another brother who's getting attacked. We rally around him, and we don't give a damn if he does nothing for us. We just pissed off because Fox News and the other racists are throwing jabs at him. But if you really look at what has President Obama done for African Americans, I mean, there's no urban renewal program. He has made no nationwide jobs program for inner cities. He's done nothing to rebuild the infrastructure of inner cities and African American neighborhoods. As a matter of fact, he doesn't even visit African American neighborhoods. During his second election, when he ran for re-election, I'll never forget this. He had a jobs tour because at the time, the unemployment was pretty high. But he chose places like Idaho, Kansas. He even went to Illinois and went to an Illinois suburb and didn't even visit his hometown of Chicago, where the unemployment at the time was 17%. So he's in Idaho where the employment is 5% and they're doing pretty good down there. He's over there talking to them about jobs, and not one inner city, black city, did President Obama stop in. So it's gotten worse under Obama of the Democrats taking out they knew we were going to vote for him at a rate of something like 95%, some crazy number, which is fine. I can understand that. But the bottom line is he has not been held accountable by African-American voters. And historically, we have not held Democrats. Actually, Democrats have done more for us, like under a Clinton. The best Democrat that we've had is Lyndon Johnson. He actually had a war on poverty, and it actually made a difference. That's when you get these student loans and all this help for African-Americans to get into college. Sort of like the food stamps and welfare benefits to help poor African-Americans survive while they try to transition to a better life or middle class life per se. So the Democrats have taken our votes for granted, and never so much as in history as now we're being taken for granted.
And not just that, brother, but the Democrats have pitted us against the Republicans. They've pitted us against the Republicans. I have some Democratic friends, assembly people, mayors, and who I hold in high regard. But the Democrats have pitted African Americans against the Republican Party because, and Republicans haven't helped themselves by wanting to cut social programs, by wanting to cut Medicaid. And so the Republicans have made it easy for the Democrats to pit the other 99%, let's say, against the Republicans and the Tea Party by branding them as people who want to take away the goodies that the Democratic Party has bestowed onto the African Americans, people of color, I should say, not just African Americans, but people of color.
Right, right. The Republicans have done nothing. They've actually reinforced the image. And the sad thing about the Republicans, and I understand why African Americans don't vote for them, which is why I don't vote for them, they use these code words, these racial code words, to fire up, those rural whites that, the black folks are sitting home on welfare and none of them work. They're having babies and increasing their welfare amounts. They don't want to work. Look at them doing all the crime and blah, blah, blah. They constantly use these code words to rally their white base at the expense of our reputation and our interests. So that's one of the reasons why it was easy for the Democrats to pit blacks against Republicans, because Republicans constantly give them ammunition to reinforce that image that they are not for our interests. They think of us as lower class Americans, and that they have basically written us off, and they are going to use us to rally the white voters in America, and that's it. But they're now seeing that they can't win elections by doing that. So you have people even like Governor Christie, Senator Rand Paul, and even Senator Paul, Congressman Paul Ryan, that are reaching out now to the African-American voters. They know that they cannot continue to win elections by ignoring African Americans and manipulating us to rally white voters, and also the same thing with the whole immigration argument. That whole thing is to rally, whites. They're coming across the border, they're taking their jobs, we got to pay to take care of their children and teach them English. So all of these things that the Republicans have been doing has now caught up to them. So now it looks like they realize it, and you're going to see more outreach from Republicans to African Americans and other minorities.
But they're going to be right, but it's going to be clumsy and uncomfortable at best, because in order to reach out to someone, you have to know a little bit about them. And since the Republicans don't know anything, they had 2 years to try to the balance of Barack Obama's presidency. They had a couple of years to try to figure out black folks and what we're really about, and to not because we ourselves, and we've helped ourselves in this cause, Brother Osman.
Right.
We got about 90 seconds left of the show. I just want to say real quick that we've helped ourselves. The Republicans have branded us as lazy shifters and et cetera, et cetera. And we haven't helped ourselves in that cause, because I hate to say, but many of us haven't been as advantageous as we could have been in regards to making a better situation for ourselves. We haven't done it. I mean, we talk about, everybody, it's not, there are some walls that we put up. We jump over those walls, they're not that high. But I want to thank you, Brother Osman. Brother Osman Shabazz, you can call in any time, my brother. I appreciate you hanging in there with me for a whole hour. I didn't expect you to, but I appreciate you. And we need to let people know they got to call into the radio program and let's talk. It's not about ratings. This is more, much bigger than ratings. We need to talk about some of these things, brother. And we need to come together because, we're never going to make it unless we do.
I agree with the spirit of what you're saying. And thanks for allowing me to become to participate in this show, and I hope the audience has gained something from it. I'm sure they have. And you keep on pushing, and
yeah, you've got an open invitation, my brother. All right, everybody, take care. We'll see you back here next week. We're out of here.
Take care. Have a great Sunday.
You too, brother.